Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and you're in for a really fun episode here. I hopped on a call with my friend and yours, Josh Mallerman, to just have a conversation. It's spooky season, he's been writing a bunch of books, he just had Spin a Black Yarn come out a couple months ago, and we're pals, and he hadn't been on the podcast yet this year, so we chatted for about an hour and a half about everything horror and spooky, and I'm gonna give that to you pretty much unedited for the most part. I think this is a really fun conversation. We talked about the nonfiction book that he's been writing. We talked about the documentary that he filmed. We talked about some of our recent favorite horror novels. We talked about all kinds of stuff. We talked about what horror means to us and why we gravitate to horror. We talked about what scares us. It was great. It was a great conversation. It is always a delight to chat with Josh. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Josh Mallerman.
Hello.
So I kind of want this to just be just this, just like a chill conversation. Happening in spooky season.
Okay.
not necessarily like a formal interview. Not that ours are ever formal interviews, but
yeah, you know. No, I hear you. You seem like you've had a ton of amazing guests at the store.
It's been wild.
Yeah.
I don't know how it keeps happening, but it's been crazy. We just had our big event with Chuck Wendig and Clay McLeod Chapman, and that was incredible. And yeah,
how was that guy, the most recent pictures, like the Dracula like stuff he was talking about?
Oh yeah, the Dracula Daily guy, Matt Kirkland. That was so cool. So do you know about what Dracula Daily is?
No, but now I want to.
It's the coolest thing. So he, like, in like 2020 or maybe 2021, like, he just kind of became obsessed with reading Dracula. And he was like, oh, it's really interesting that it's this like epistolary novel. And he realized that he was kind of reading it in real time. Like, he was like, oh, if I slow down a little bit here, I'm actually kind of like, I'm like in the summer, I'm like reading it on the right dates. And so what he did was he took it, because there are certain parts of the novel that are like flashbacks, but it's still within the same like 9 months or whatever. So he took it all and rearranged it so that it was in chronological order. And he set up a newsletter that emails you the chunk of text from that day on the corresponding day. So you get the entire novel of Dracula in chronological order as it's happening.
Wow.
And it just, like, he did it just as like a pet project, and it blew up. And like, because I remember like a couple of our booksellers like subscribed to it right off the bat. And so that's how I found out about it. Cause they were like, are you doing Dracula Daily? And I was like, no, tell me more. And now it's got, I think he's got like 250,000 people subscribed, and it's just like an automated like thing. But what happened was that the internet happened, right? The internet was like reading Dracula altogether. So they started making memes and stuff about the things that were happening in the book, because it turns out when you really slow it down and you only read like, you know, a paragraph or a page at a time, you start to notice like little things like, oh wow, Jonathan Harker's like really into paprika. Like, and so like these really like funny observations came out. And so he made it into a book in that it is chronological. And then it's also like he has like memes and illustrations and funny commentary from the internet like scattered throughout the book. And it is so good. It's so funny. Like, people are so clever. And yeah, it's awesome. And so he came and he did this like really fun presentation about how it all happened, and he like shared some of the memes, and like it was such a funny presentation that we had people, this was at 2 o'clock on a Sunday, it was like a packed house, and people just were like wandering by, and they would stop and listen and then sit down because they were like, what is happening, what are these Dracula memes, like what's going on. It was great. It was so much fun. Yeah.
I think I'm gonna look into that. You know, I it almost feels like, not cliche, but it almost feels like too on the nose to say, but that might be the greatest horror novel ever written. I mean,
It's
it really
so
might be.
good.
It's so good, man.
It's so good.
I remember, so I, it's funny, I almost have this period of my life that I consider that I like, I don't want to say turned my back on horror or something, but I was like reared on horror, right? And then got to, and I was still reading that like through college when I should have been reading, you know, what it was being assigned, that kind of thing.
100%.
And the same with my songwriting partner, Mark, whereas he wasn't really reading the right books that he was supposed to be reading. So when we moved to New York, we were like, let's read the books that we were assigned in college. Like,
Nice.
let's read Allison and Fitzgerald and Hemingway. Let's actually do this. And so we did. So all of a sudden, I was kind of like picking off the classics, right? Virginia Woolf, Proust, Fitzgerald, Hemingway, down, just down the line. And I started to actually go to that Barnes and Noble classic section. Remember that? And the next one in line was Dracula. And I was like, oh yeah, oh right. Dracula's a classic, right? And I hadn't read horror at that point in like, my God, like 4 years, 5 years. I know, it's weird. And in fact, there was, I remember someone pointed out House of Leaves to me, and I was like, what is this? You know, I had no idea what it was. And so I read Dracula, and it was like the entire future opened up to me, the entire world opened up to me, because it was like, oh shit, you could write a classic horror novel. And I had like forgot that or something. But also, if you think about it, in those days, genre was like not frowned upon, but it just wasn't quite taken as seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And nowadays, like, there's no question, I mean, no question, a sci-fi classic. And I say this often, and I mean it, that everyone in the horror scene right now, like anyone is capable of writing one of those. And when I say that, what I kind of mean is, let's say there's like an author that's hasn't nailed his or her voice yet, or maybe they think that they write clunky or whatever, right? Okay, but what if that person were to write a book that an 8-year-old narrates? Now all of a sudden, this, what you see as like a defect in your writing, all of a sudden becomes like useful. So you're, oh, I'm too clunky, or I'm too simple, or I'm too this. Well, maybe find someone that's supposed to be talking that way. Or I'm too wordy. Okay, well, maybe find like the Usher, the father in that show, Usher, which was amazing. My God. Jesus. You find someone like that. I mean, look here, I am right here. And it's like, that's kind of what I'm talking about. And but I think Tarantino helped this happen. I think that Kubrick with The Shining helped this happen. I think The Exorcist helped this happen. Obviously, Stephen King helped this happen, where genre has reached a point where it's like, it's not unusual at all for a horror novel to be considered a classic. When Dracula came out, it was unusual. You know, like that was like, that's like that painting of, what's that famous painting with like the shark going up to the boat? Yeah, and everyone always saw that back in the day. They're like, this is sensationalism. This is like a shark attack. This isn't a, we give us a meadow and pointillism. We don't want a shark. So, but that's wiped out now. But at the time, that thinking was kind of still there. And Dracula like slapped me. It was like, dude, you know, because I was trying to write novels already, and I was thinking in sort of a, I don't want to say lofty literary way, but a little bit like that. And Dracula reminded me, like, hey, where your roots are, you could write a classic there.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, Dracula was one that like I tried to read it in probably high school, and I think I was too young for it. Like I wasn't used to reading classics yet, so I was just like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. And then I read it again years later, and I was like, oh, like blew my mind.
I know. I almost think that like in high school or something, we should have been assigned like just anything that's fun,
Yeah,
just to keep reading
absolutely.
fun. You know what I mean? So that like just the act of reading is fun, because number one, right, number one, it just shows you that this is like a super fun activity. But number two, I don't think I would have been ready for Moby Dick then. Right.
It's like you haven't been reading that long. It's like
Right.
if you're 18, you've only been reading for like maybe 15 years, if you're lucky. Like,
Yeah.
you know, it's you don't have your chops yet. Yeah, no, I think it would be great if like high schoolers were assigned just like contemporary stuff, just like voices that are happening right now. And then as you get older, then you can kind of delve into the classics.
Same thing when you like are, and it does work this way in high school with music, right? Because you're turned on by what like the modern rock band or pop star or whatever the hell it is. And then you start listening to what led up to this on your own. Recently I did something I've never done before, which was write a nonfiction book.
So wait, tell me all about how that came to be, because I followed your whole like process of it, and I was just amazed the whole
First
time.
of all, it was a little bit horrifying because the minute you start writing, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, wait a minute. Every single line has to be what I think. Like, whereas the narrator doesn't have to. Like, in Spin a Black Yarn, obviously, I'm not thinking like Sean Hasbro, the serial killer, to be in the bed. Obviously.
I'm just
No.
googling.
But, so he can say a million things that I would never say. He could say something mean, even. Like, see, that's always an interesting thing for me. Like, I'm just not a very mean person. And so like sometimes when a character like says something cruel to someone, I'm always like, oh, do I want that? But then meanwhile, I'm writing horror novels. And like, so it's like I would never say that. In this book though, like literally every sentence has to be, no, this is you, everyone. So it's almost like the impetus for the documentary and this both were a feeling that social media isn't wide enough for me to express myself. That TikTok is a little too st I actually really like the idea of TikTok, a little too stylized, not meaning watching someone's video, but in order to express like say, how I feel about writing, let's say. It's just a little too like punchy, stylish, a little too clean. Facebook is too much of like a declare, like a post, like, this is how I feel. And Twitter is too much of like sort of like, to me, number one, it's a little too small, but it's like a permanent sort of stance. And like, okay, but my feelings on writing are fluid, and my feelings on everything, just like yours on everything, are fluid and change all the time. So at some point it became like, hey, if you want to express how you feel about writing, why don't you document the writing of a novel? Okay. So 3 books ago, I sat down to work on that book. Or I guess it was 4 books ago now. Sat down to write that book. And I'm like, okay, now let's film this. And then I'm like, oh, f that's a lot of work, man. Oh, f this, And so then I wrote the book instead, because writing a book is enough work. Next book up, I'm like, dude, you should film this. And I'm like, no, God, that's so much work. I'm just going to write the book. And whatever it was 2 weeks ago, finally, I was like, you have to do this. If Anne Rice did this, if Anne Rice or Dean Koontz or Stephen King or Richard Lehman, anyone from like the 80s, 90s, had made like a documentary of them writing, the Vampire Lestat or something. We every single one of us, it might not have been some hit in a theater, but every single one of us would have watched that.
Yeah,
And
100%.
so, like that's what I like wanted for the horror reader, writer, blah blah blah. And so I discovered in there, holy shit, it worked. Like in terms of, I was able to. In right now, it's 50 hours of footage that hasn't been edited yet.
Oh my God.
But it's like I was able to actually, this is how I feel, even if it's just there's scenes of me just being silly in the office for like extended periods of time. In fact, there's a lot of that. Kind of like, did you see that Beatles doc? And how they're like just goofing off a lot. And that's what this was like too. And I started thinking, like, I wonder if there's something to that you're undertaking such a It's such an undertaking that there almost needs to be a vent, like a humor event. You can't just sit there like seriously at your desk, like, watch their next line. Instead, you're like, do. There's like, you're like dancing to a metronome and you're like singing the words that you're writing. And so that led to, for about 10 years now, I've had an idea for a nonfiction book. It was a night that Allison and I had like 10 years ago, in which she had never seen the movie Evil Dead. All right. And the remake had just come out. Oh, by the way, her and I are like kind of somewhat new to each other still.
Yep.
And we still call each other baby all the time and stuff. But then it was like we were, it was like the word Smurf.
Yep.
Like it was every like you could use it. Baby, I'm baby, 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 I'm baby today, baby. And like and anyway, so her cousin had the movie on DVD or something. What I didn't know as we were going over to her cousin's house was that while we were in brand new love, him and his girlfriend, this was like the night they break up.
Oh,
So
okay.
already just pit this dynamic in the room together and in this. And I had just got a book deal prior to this, like months before.
Yep.
So I'm standing at the head of a career, Bird Box's book one, and we're watching a movie that is Sam Raimi's first movie. He's standing at the head of his career, and Bruce Campbell and everyone, blah, blah, blah. Oh, not to mention real fast, those guys grew up 4 miles from where I'm sitting right now. So
Oh, amazing.
the Michigan connection as well. So all these mammoth backdrops, fresh love, dying love, horror, the genre, a career, what's expected, what does an artist deserve? Hey Josh, what are you hoping happens here? What would be success with Bird Box? It hasn't come out yet. What do you deserve? And that starts to become the question of the book. It's almost like, you know, we're all getting drunk and stoned and watching Evil Dead, and then we watch the remake, and then we watch part two. And the question is not leaving. What does the artist deserve? And I'm not gonna tell you the conclusion because I'm very actually excited about it. But the next morning, as we were so hungover leaving their house, I said to Allison on the drive, I'm like, last night could be a book. Like everything was present. Everything was present there last night, every mammoth backdrop. So for 10 years, friends would come over to the office or something, and I would be like, you know, and they'd be like, what else are you working on? I'm like, well, I've got this idea called Watching Evil Dead. You know, I've got this idea for a book. It's called, and they're like, oh, is it about the history? I'm like, no. In fact, I know very little about the movie itself. There's no like expert in the book. It's like, I don't know who filmed this part, but it's amazing. You know, I don't, you know, it's all very, I think this is Tennessee. There's like no expert angle at all. It
Amazing.
understates like this is just a dude showing his girlfriend a horror movie. But in the end, not to sound like corny, she's kind of showing me because she's getting things from it that I'm like, man, you're right. Like she saw it as like a moving, like dark painting, right?
Oh.
I know. And I'm like, yeah, that is what this is, you know. So watching Evil Dead took about like 2 months to write or whatever. Then I rewrote it. And again, that rewrite the whole time, that sense of every line has got to be what you think, man. Like, you know, like this is you. And it was intense, but it's done. I'm going to make a few changes and then send it to Kristen. That was a very long monologue.
No, I'm so excited because I was so curious what when you were like, I'm writing this nonfiction book, and for some reason I hear nonfiction and my brain goes like history novel, like yeah, history book, which is not yet. Yeah, there's, as I say to all of my customers in the store who come in and go, "Where's your nonfiction section?" I'm like, "It's everything that's not fiction. I don't. It's the whole store." But so it's really cool to hear like where it's gonna kind of fit. Like I'm almost wondering, like I'm picturing like where what shelf that's gonna sit on. And I kind of feel like it's gonna be like either the like we have like a literary essays and criticism section, and we have like a books on like movies and media section, and we have like I don't know, and obviously like memoir. Like there's I feel like it's
You're right. It's interesting, right? Because it could also just be next to Bird Box or something.
right. It could also just be in
Right. But
horror, like
yeah, it could just be
it.
horror. But I know. And I think that this all, everything you just said scares my agent a little. But
Yeah.
to me, it's like, what's the right phrase? I don't want to say it's not self-help, but what I think would happen is, and I actually saw this happen already with a friend. There's one friend that has read the book so far. And immediately afterward, he writes me like, because the book is like, it's a call to arms of like, right for no reason. I mean, that's, it really is. So I would hope what would happen is at the end of it, anyone that wanted to make that movie, wanted to write that book, wanted to say that thing, like, does it. So in a weird way, it's self-help is not the right word, but an inspirational is not the right word. But in a way, it's like a shot in the arm to like any young artist read this book, and they're gonna be like, "F it, I'm making that movie."
I mean, yeah, we also have like books for writers section, you know,
Right,
which is
that
where
too.
like Stephen King's On Writing, that's where that is. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see like how it's marketed and like how it's
Yeah,
what
or
they do
where it
with it.
ends up, we're gonna shop it to Del Rey, and I hope they're crazy about it, but I also understand if they're like, we don't, what is this? We don't do this, you know what I mean? So, but of course, I hope that they're thrilled, and if they're not, then I guess we find someone that is. I later on, maybe even you could even tell me people that do publish stuff like that or something. I don't know, but.
Oh, I love that. And so then, so is that the one, what was the book you were writing while you were filming the documentary?
That's a book. It's a working title, but so it's called "It Tolls for Thee," and
Ooh.
it's about. I'll give you the smallest version. It's a little more sci-fi than normal for me, but it's
Okay.
a guy is works for this like shady sort of like company, and he essentially, how do I, he's imprisoned in this cell, and in this cell they're testing out this new form of torture through metronome. Right. So, and so he's literally nonstop. And then there's other, and he's in here. He was part of the company when they were like coming up with this thing, and now he's become like the test of it. So it takes place up by like where inspection takes place.
Okay.
And so I love this. So every day, like the cell door, opens, but it opens in a way like he early on, he tries to run to the door when it opens, but his food is like slid in every day, whatever. After a while, the torture sort of backfires, and he not only accepts it, but he starts to study it, the metronome and the clicking and the clocks ticking and the alarms and constant barrage of time. And after a while, he's not, if you study something long enough, well, you master it. So he begins to believe, maybe he's losing his mind, he begins to believe that he can speed up and slow down time. So he's like in this cell, like losing his mind. And then finally he's gonna try it. One day he's gonna try it. And that day, the cell door, he hears like the click, and then he's like, all right, let's do it. And then it's like, and he just walks right out of the cell. And he walks right by the guy that's like slowly setting down the food. And it's like he's mastered time. But it turns out that he needs to be in the presence of like a ticking or whatever for this. So for a while, he has a metronome with, oh, so begins him on the trail back towards the company to like kill them all. You know, I mean, that's the idea, right? To get his revenge for whatever he's done. So it feels a little more action, a little more sci-fi than I normally do. But it worked out incredibly for the documentary because there was endless clocks, timepieces, metronome, and then also the pace of writing, a novel. And so it turned out to be the in the documentary, there's often questions of, is this the right f-ing book to be doing? Like, it's like a vampire novel. What am I doing right now? It's like the weirdest idea ever. But I think that the elements of the book actually did work out perfect for it.
That's really cool. I like that you've been kind of dipping your toe in some sci-fi because you did that in Spin a Black Yarn too, with like the
Yeah.
Jupiter Drop and even the house washer one, which is my favorite.
House watch, excuse me.
I love
Thank
that
you. Allison and
one.
I, the first house that we ever like rented that we moved into. After like being in this apartment for a short while together, I don't even know. I don't know if it's any bigger than the house you're in right now, but it seemed huge to us at the time, like unbelievably huge. And we just kept walking around, like, oh my God, that we there's like here's another room, And at some point, I remember we were standing in the living room, and I'm like, how are we gonna clean all this? Because it was a dumb joke. And then I was like, oh, imagine if this like the tube comes up, you and I just sit here, we get to just read, and this solution fills the house, and everything's cleaned at once, 1 hour, everything, the pages of the book, blah, blah, blah. And then I started thinking, ooh, Like imagine like all like your life like swirling around you, like all, you know, there's your varsity jacket and there's your photos from your first girlfriend and there's your, you know, the angry like book report you did because you were angry for because you were younger and dumb about something, like and all these like embarrassing life items. And then I started thinking of Doug and Judy in that tube, and I was like, oh, what if two assholes were in that tube, you know?
Yeah. I love that so much. I love them just being confronted with everything. And they're just like, they're just so mad about it. I love that. But I also like, I've discovered recently that, cause I was trying to figure out like what actually scares me. Cause I'm so somewhat desensitized to horror, right? Because it's like all I consume. So I was like trying to think recently about things that actually do genuinely freak me out. And I've realized that it's anything where you either hear something or see something that isn't supposed to be there. So like I have this genuine fear of checking the baby monitor and seeing someone other than who's supposed to be in there, someone other than my kids, right? Or like, you know, driving at night and seeing something flash through the headlights that I'm like, that wasn't supposed to be there. And so in Doug and Judy, like there's when they start to see like a figure, I was like, oh this is good. This is turning into something.
Oh, but that's, I like that a lot. That's a really interesting way of putting that, like something, seeing something there that's not supposed to be there. Like, I'm just trying to think like, let's say you're driving along the highway late at night and I mean even like an overhead projector on the side of the road
would be
like that, not someone's garbage, not the end of the driveway, like just sitting there on the just side of the there. Road, like something that's like, what is that doing here?
It's that very like, it's the same vibe I get when I'm confronted with like a liminal space or like very uncanny valley. It's just not quite right. It's like, you know, a completely abandoned, empty office space and there's nothing, but there's like a soda machine that's still plugged in and that's the only thing in the whole building. And it's just like, I don't know why that's so scary, but I hate it.
It is either. It feels like, because I follow, there's a Twitter account, I think called Liminal Spaces that I follow. Do you follow that?
I don't think so. I'll have to look God. It up.
It's like so unnerving. And like, but there's a sense that like something bad happened there. There's a sense that like something bad could happen. There's a sense that something is happening that I can't see. You know?
There's this book that I read a while back. I think it's only published in Canada right now, but I had an audiobook version of it. It's called Kill the Mall. So it's like Kill the Mall, but it's Kill the Mall. And this wicked like liminal space type book where like this guy takes a job where he just sits down in this mall and he like sits at this desk and he just makes work. Like that's what they're like, just make work. And he's like, okay. So he's just like writing diaries about what's happening during the day to day. And like the things that happen are so buck wild, but he's just very diligently writing it all down. And like occasionally he'll be like, that was interesting, but like he's so even keeled about it. And like it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. And eventually he's like walking through this essentially mostly abandoned mall where the only people there are the few people working there, but they seem to be disappearing. And then it becomes a labyrinth. And at one point he ends up at an indoor swimming pool inside this mall. And I think there's a horse. It's so weird. And it's so freaky.
Oh man. I've had a long, long time had like an idea of like a brother and sister. I can't remember exactly, but somehow they ended up like in a hotel of that nature, or maybe it's more of like a, like, did you see that? There was that one thread of that guy that was like at a conference and then he's like, he went to use the bathroom, whatever, and he couldn't find his way back to the, did you see that thing?
Yes.
Incredible. And like, all that was, it was so unsettling.
Yeah.
And all it was like, now I've ended up here. What is this? And it was all spaces like you're talking about. And like that in and of itself, you can almost argue that that's like a genius horror story
Yeah.
in and
Yeah.
of itself. Like that's its own movie, its own book, its own short story. And oh yeah.
Yeah. It's so like anything where things just aren't quite right. Like it just, it hits. I was at a train station a couple months ago. I was heading down to New York, and I knew instinctually, I knew that there was a certain spot I was supposed to be at to catch the train, but I couldn't figure out how to get there. And also I was like, there's looking online, there's supposed to be like bathrooms and concession stands, and I'm looking around and I'm at this like outside station where there's only two tracks and there's nothing inside. There's like a hallway that leads nowhere. And I mean, I walked up and down these stairs. I walked back and forth along this hallway. I'm checking every door, like nothing. Can't figure out how to get where I'm supposed to get. And then I like took one slightly different staircase, and all of a sudden I was in this huge cavernous indoor space with like all of these like restaurants and like waiting areas. And then I went down a different staircase and there was a whole nother train station. And I was like,
Oh, really?
where was all of this? Because I have been
Oh.
outside for an hour lapping this whole place and none of this was visible. Like it was so freaky.
Another sort of like version of liminal space is like you can almost argue like what's the right phrase? Not soupy time, but time, like a dream where me and my bandmates are setting up our pedals to play, and we keep setting up our pedals to play. And there's another chord to plug in, and there's another pedal to put down, and there's another drum to bring on stage, and then the crowd's all here, and we're supposed to get started. And there's some anxiety about getting started, but it's not that. It's like the endless stretch of like, why is it taking so long to set this up? And that's a liminal space in a strange, freaky way too. And typically they only happen in dreams, but sometimes you feel it in reality too.
Yeah. Ugh, it's so creepy. Yeah, and it's so fun that I've like discovered this about myself, because now I can like seek that out. Like, all right, let me scare myself a little bit. Which is always fun. But going back to, so when you filmed the documentary, what sort of did you have like a crew there filming you? Did you just like set up like, hidden cameras or in your office? Like, what was that process like?
Oh, okay. So this amazing production company called Beck Woods, they wrote A Quiet Place. They
Oh, okay.
directed 65. They wrote The Boogeyman. They're making another movie now, and they're a production company, and they have been shopping Carpenter's Farm to TV. And oh my God, if that happens. Also, well, I probably shouldn't, maybe I should say this, but I think there is a limited edition of that maybe coming out sooner than later, like an actual physical form
Ooh,
of that. That
ooh.
not, not to whatever, just this, but that one's one of my
That would be
favorites
cool.
of mine.
Yeah.
And so blah blah blah. But so we're already working with them on that. And to sort of like kick myself in the ass, I tweeted, I'm making a f-ing documentary of writing a novel, and I'm starting it like right now, blah blah blah. That night, Beck Woods wrote me saying, hey, can we produce this? And
I love that.
I was like, what? Because my idea was film it, edit it on iMovies, put it on YouTube. Again, if Anne Rice, it does, we don't even need title cards. It could open with Anne Rice being like, I'm writing a vampire book. And that's all we would have. Oh my God.
Yeah, we would have loved it. We'd
We
be
would have
in
loved it. Right.
it.
But with them on board, they definitely assisted in getting like a better camera, way better audio gear. I can't even imagine what this would have been like without that. And the most amazing part was that anything I filmed within like 20 minutes, it was on the cloud, and they watch it. So I was
That's
getting
cool.
they were like watching the dailies,
I
and they
love
would like
that.
weigh in and say like, oh, well, we loved when you did this, or could you talk more about this one subject you brought up? Maybe talk more about this. Or at one point, my God, it was a 90-minute segment where I opened up like the crates of all the books I've written, and I don't even go that far into each one. I'm just like, this one was, two sentences about it. And this one was in October. And she said, but I mean, it was like 90 minutes worth because they had sort of said, like, you keep talking about the crate of other novels. Let's see those. So there were moments like that. So no, there weren't any other crew in the room, but there were people that helped get better gear in the room. And in a way, they were in the room because they were weighing in on everything.
That's cool. That's cool. Because I was like trying to imagine you writing, and there's just like a guy with a
Well, there's very
No.
little footage. Very, yeah, no, like five people, like just, I'm just like, doo, doo, doo,
And type.
doo, doo. Yeah, no, there was very little, what's the right phrase? Outside of this office, first of all. I filmed, like, Allison had shows that I filmed, a little. Oh, we had a New Year's party here. I filmed some of that.
Nice.
So there was some elements of day in the life of, but not really. And on day one, oh, one thing that's fun is that there are numerous occasions of trying to work a scene out. So whether it's by drawing it, like, so okay, he's over here, and then if he's in the cell and the metronome's coming from here, another one was with like little figurines in this gas station scene. So the car would pull in here, and so to have that like filmed up close and like these little pieces moving. Another one, it was to have Allison dress up as the main dude. She had like a mustache, and I think she was wearing like this.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, so you now, oh God, I can't. Any of this book is so awesome because can I just ruin it for you? Can I just tell you, or should I not?
Absolutely.
And finally reaches the head of the company, and he there's nothing, making the time. There's no he can't control time because there's nothing. But then he realizes the guy has this super fancy ch ch watch, ch and then as the guy's like standing up to like say something or I don't know what, throw him out of the office. He slows him down. So for like 30 pages, the guy is just like standing up. And in while he is, our man like tortures him.
Oh, I love that.
So in real time for this guy, all he did was stand up, and by the time he's standing, like decimated.
Wow,
Yeah.
that's amazing.
Awesome. It's totally awesome. Yeah.
That's
So
gonna be so cool.
I had Allison in the chair. Okay, like stand up really slowly. How slow can we stretch this out to like 30 pages of like what could I actually, his name is Lauren, the main guy. What could Lauren actually do to you? Like, let's see if you're like, so now you're here, you're sort of hunched forward. So that's a fun aspect of the documentary is that it's very little of me writing, but a lot of working out scenes and like talking about what's next. And I can even show you this real fast. This is the outline of the book.
Oh my God, look at that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so there was like a long segment of outlining the book on the office walls.
Just on the walls.
Yeah.
I love that. That's really cool. Yeah, I think that's going to be really fun to watch, to just like watch it. 'Cause you write so fast.
Sometimes, yeah. It is. Sometimes it's crazy. I'm Barry Carroll. It was 15 days.
Yeah, like
That's
you
crazy.
just like crank. I feel like there was a point where it was like I talked to you one day and you were like, "Oh, I'm like starting this book and I have an idea for another one." And I talked to you like 2 months later and you were like, "Oh, I finished both of those." And I
I remember that.
was like,
Yeah. But keep in mind, those are the rough drafts. And
"Whoa, whoa, whoa." Well, of
oh,
course.
it's funny, like no matter how many times, because like prior to Bird Box being published, I never there was no never a cause to rewrite really. I freehand wrote a book, so there was cause to type it in, and you can't help but rewrite, but nothing major. So now I guess there's been like 12 books. I'm looking at them all right now, like 12 that have come out. And there is a sense of like, hey, by now, Josh, you should know that there's so much work in the rewrite. Maybe a little more care in the rough draft, but hell no. I don't drink while I write. No f-ing way. No way. But it is sort of the equivalent of like pounding a fifth and just
Absolutely.
but
Yeah,
no
no,
way.
it's
I tried one book. I don't know if you've ever tried to write drunk. Oh God,
no,
it was.
I
How are
couldn't.
there, I don't even know how there are legendary stories of like Faulkner and Hemingway. I don't understand how they did that.
I tr It must have just been like that was just their baseline all the time. And
Yeah, no,
like,
Right.
You know,
The
and that,
friends
like,
who
if they were
grasp all
sober
that.
and nothing would have happened, right? Like, it's the opposite for them.
I tried one book that way. And then, so I freehand wrote it, right? And I, honest to God, I asked a good friend of mine who was like, she was like in need of some money at the time. And I had some more on me at the time. And I was like, hey, I'm going to give you $1,000 to type this up for me. It was actually just the first third. So it was like 100 pages. So that's a good deal.
Absolutely.
$1,000. She returned it to me. She's like, keep the money. I can't f-ing read this.
I can't do this. I can't do
I'm sorry, Josh. This is not worth any amount of money.
That's funny.
Yeah. And one time, my God, never again. One time I tried, I like had a little grass. I don't smoke grass often. And I tried it before because I was like, oh no, well, maybe it'll be like, something
Yeah.
really scary. But every line felt so scary. I was like, he had a hamster. Ooh, a hamster's scary. Like, little hamster on a wheel and a little squeaking. And then I'm like, an hour later, I'm like, wait, what's going on? He had a hamster?
Go back and reread it, and it's just like a children's lullaby. Like,
Seriously, man. It's like the most embarrassing thing.
that's
Like,
incredible.
everything was so scary.
It was so scary. Everything was terrifying, spooky.
So at that time, I was like, okay, no, none of this.
Yeah. No, that's super valid. That's super valid. That's so funny. Okay, so it's spooky season, and I feel like you and I both have been doing a lot of watching and reading of spooky things. What you've been reading a lot of Malfi, right?
Yeah. Have you read They Lurk?
I have not. I need to.
It's got, I mean, I think he might be one of the all-timers. Like, that's how good
Okay.
this guy is to me. Like, this isn't, and I know there's, again, I keep saying it, but anyone in our scene right now is capable of doing this. I really firmly believe this.
Yeah.
Ronald's done it. Like,
That's awesome.
he's done it. Like, I'm one story deep into the Ghost Written. Did you read that one?
No, I haven't read any of his yet.
Oh my God. There's something like this could come off wrong in this day and age, and I don't want it to. There's something refreshingly masculine about it.
Okay.
There's like, it feels like a dude is like drinking at the bar and encounters this unbelievably creative scenario, Then it's refreshingly like masculine in that way, not in a sexist way, not at all, but in a just sort of like an old school like man way. And the writing itself is, I mean, as good as anything I've ever read. I'm just
Awesome.
like, I started reading Come With Me, and right away the first thing I was like, man, this guy's a good writer, like Jesus. And then I had heard of December Park and Bone White because a lot of people love those too. And I'm reading, I'm like, wait a minute. This isn't just good. Like, this is extraordinary. I'm trying to, here, hold on. Where are you? It's got to be right here. I think I put them on the, yeah, I did. I put them on the favorite shelf.
Nice.
Let's just see, like, okay. Let's just read the opening sentence of one of them. Why not, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Okay. This is sentence one. Dimitri, the unreliable son of a bitch, was late picking me up at the Kaustrelasten station by a good 2 hours, so I suffered an exhaustive morning at a railway cafe, drinking ice cafe, and attempting to divide my attention between the massive huddle of commuters filing off a train from Mainz and my own luggage at my feet in an effort to thwart any lurking cretins from walking off with it. I mean, that's just sentence one. I mean, it's just like, it's like it was a cool spring day, but my patience was growing thin with each furtive glance at the enormous, well-mounted clock above the station entrance. It's all like, it's just right away you're getting this like the misty, ghosty, old horror story feel.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's an opening shot of a like a black and white horror
Yes.
movie.
Know. So there's something very, and you saw like that's what I meant by masculine, like that son of a, where is he? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right? And like there's something like, I don't know, it's just refreshing. It reminds you of like the first horror stories that like you fell in love with this.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, I'll have to. I know we have some of his books in the store. I'll have to grab some. I've been drowning in horror all year.
It's so
there's so much good stuff right now.
No, I know. It's like every single day, it seems like you see something, you're like, oh wow, oh shit, that looks good. Oh boy, that looks good. Yeah,
it's intense. My God, I like can't keep up with it. And I have people who are like messaging me and they're like, have you read this one? And I'm like, no, but I have it, so I'll read it next. Like,
I know. It almost becomes like you almost have to accept that there are some you're not going to get to, or at least not right now.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you start to feel a little like strained.
Totally. Yeah. There's definitely like ones where, and this is just the nature of my job. Like if I know, all right, this one's going to sell on its own, this one doesn't need an extra push from me, I will just set it to the side. I'll get to it at some point, but I'm not going to like rush to read it before it comes out, because like I have debut authors to read, and I have like, you know, indie authors who are not going to get a marketing push. It's like, I'll read those and like help them out a little bit. And then it's like, you know, I'm not sitting around reading Stephen King because he doesn't need my help. You know what I mean? Like my coworker's reading him, but yeah, it's like, I'm, you know, did you read The September House by Carissa Orlando?
No. Awesome.
Oh my God.
All right, I'll write it down.
Oh, dude, it's like top five of the year for me. It's a debut novel, and it opens, and the main character is just like heavy sigh. She's like, oh, the walls are bleeding again. And it's this amazing haunted house book where this woman and her husband bought their dream house and very quickly realized that it is super haunted, but especially in September, like it everything gets worse in September. Oh, so it's cool. Like there are some ghosts that are there year round. Like she has like a housemaid ghost who just like, she just kind of was like, oh, okay, you keep trying to make me tea, so I guess I'll just drink the tea. Oh, okay, you just want to help. So it's like, she's got like her housemaid ghost, but then like in September, you know, the walls start to bleed and like the ghost children appear. And like, there's one who she's like, yeah, you know, if you get too close to Elias, he'll bite you and leave a pretty good mark. So just don't get within biting distance of him and it's fine. And so she's like totally normalized and like learned the rules of her haunted house. But then you very quickly learn that her husband has gone missing and she's like not really doing anything to find him. And her daughter's like, I'm coming to town. We're going to find dad. And she's like, it's September, though. And like her daughter doesn't know the house is haunted. And she's like, how do I hide the fact that my house is super haunted?
Oh, it's cool.
And it's like, but it's like so, like the haunted house is like this gorgeous metaphor for like domestic abuse and like how she's just totally normalized everything and is just like, nope, I have followed the rules and everything will be okay. And then it's not. It's like, oh, it's so, so good.
All right. I'm definitely going to get that one.
Oh my God. I couldn't put it down. I devoured it. I had her on the podcast a little while after
What's her name?
Carissa Orlando. And I was like, girl, how is this your debut? Like, what? it's amazing. That's up there for me this year. That one blew my mind. I read a lot of haunted house books this year. The Grady Hendrix one.
I read that. I know. It's funny, though. It's like, every single one of them is appealing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I know. It's weird. It's like they never get, it never gets old to
it
me.
It never gets old. I love it. I like, give me haunted house books forever. Like I'm, you know, like I just.
The Grip of It. Did you read that one? I think it's called The Grip of It.
I don't think so.
I'm not going to say her name, like Jamk Jen or something like that.
I don't think I've read that one.
That one I bought when it came out and I haven't read it yet, which is silly, but it's sitting here, like right here. I don't see it. But anyway, another haunted house. But
yeah,
it's funny because, you know, oftentimes when you read the jacket copy, you're like, oh, yeah. So a guy returns to his home. Oh, yeah. But then once you're like, Yeah, but I haven't read this one. This is awesome.
Right. Yeah. No, I love how just creative horror is allowed to be right now.
Yeah.
Because we're in this place where like it is accepted, I guess. It's like, I don't know. Like we were saying earlier, whereas like it used to be like sort of looked down upon, like it wasn't like literary, right? It was like, oh, it's genre fiction. Yeah. And now it's like, no, these are incredibly well-written books. Yep. And they deserve readers, and they deserve accolades. And there's just like so much good stuff. I just finished the Jordan Peele anthology. Oh, it's awesome. It's like every single story. I was like, no, this one's my favorite. And then I would read the next one and be like, nope, this one's my favorite. Like, and just like so many cool voices in horror that it's just like, it's so vast. Like there's
That, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday, actually, about the like the diversity thing that's happened recently and how obviously awesome that is. But yeah. What I was thinking of is also is like how it makes total sense that this is happening right now. At least I know it's happening everywhere in the world, but it makes a special sense in horror because never before has the genre been thirstier for fresh takes.
Yeah. Never before.
Like that movie Skinamarink.
Yeah.
Like there were all the shots were like where the walls meet the ceiling and of like the carpet and we were all like, yes. And like, so in other words, we're looking for diversity, like it's like a perfect marriage.
Yes.
That a readership, no matter your background, a readership is looking for something fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, everyone is a million times more aware of diverse voices. And mm-hmm. So it's like become like, holy shit, is it like the genre is elastic right now.
It's massive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just wild that, and this is kind of, you know, one of the things I love about particularly being an indie bookseller is that I get to like have the conversations with like the publisher reps and things like that. And they'll send me things that like, it's, you know, either a new author or just a unique voice in something. And they know that like, if I love it, it's going to become a bestseller. Like I'm going to throw this at everyone. And so it's like, it's this really cool time for these unique stories because indie booksellers are loving genre fiction so much that we are like thrusting it into the mainstream of like, no, you guys got to read this. Like,
I mean, I remember going usually a store there wouldn't even be a horror section. And you just kind of like, we're hoping to find like something weird or, you know, like something that, you know, said Bram Stoker nominated, something right. Like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like now it's like anything goes. And I don't think there's any reader I know, at least, that would be like, well, I prefer the Big Five over indie. And I'm not saying anything bad about Big Five, like at all. I'm on that.
Right, right. No, of course.
There's like holy genius stuff on all ends. But I don't think that there's, when it comes to actually standing in front of a horror section, I don't think there's any delineation of that going on in a horror fan's mind.
Right.
They just want a badass horror story.
Yeah. And that, and like, I've made a lot of really cool connections with like indie publishers and being able to carry like indie pubbed stuff in like just on our shelves. And it's like, here are authors who've been writing for decades. And like, this is the first time they're seeing their books on a shelf in a bookstore. And I'm just like, yeah, well, I like your stuff. So I forced my buyers to get it in.
Yeah. No, that's, there's no feeling like that. I just saw, I think it was Ross Jeffrey, the first time he ever saw a book of his on a shelf. And like, you watch that and you're like, I mean, I wrote for, I think it was 18 years before mm-hmm. Bird Box was on a shelf. Like to walk in, it was insane. I mean, I don't, it's like unparalleled.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah. I mean, it kind of still is. Like I went to a bookstore around here and saw Spin a Black Yarn on the like Halloween display. And I'm like, this is fucking amazing.
It's like, so cool.
Like what else could be like bothering me today?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, but I'm just like,
but
it's
like,
just like, this is, it's like, what's on the Halloween display in a bookstore? I mean, it's like, when did this happen?
yeah, because really, I mean, I was looking back, I was trying to figure out the timeline of the Gibson's horror section, and I started that in, like, I think the display happened in 2022. Like, it is a baby. Like, we have not had it for very long. I think January 2022 is when the actual, like, big display started. And then it just was like, it snowballed from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for anyone
it's
listening,
a baby.
That store is, I mean, I think that that's when I said Spin Black Yards, that I think yours is the only store that I listed.
Yeah. I was like, you were like, get it from Gibson's or, yeah, I don't know, like, anywhere else.
Yeah, get them anywhere, but also this one. Yeah.
And that's just been, and I mean, huge credit to my bosses who are so willing to be like, okay, sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that your enthusiasm for the genre is infectious, but it's also indicative of, like, that's really happening. It's not like you're into something. You're like, we need more, you know, yo-yos, yeah. You know?
Right.
I'm a yo-yo enthusiast. I think we should have a wall of yo-yos. And they're like, no, you're actually championing a thing that a lot of people are f***ing into.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a customer in the other day and they were like, hey, do you by any chance have any, like, splatterpunk books? And we had this, like, conversation and I, like, recommended a few things and then also was like, please come back with a list because I'm sure that we could carry more and I would love to have, like, more options for you.
Sure.
And they were like, this is the first bookstore I've gone into where A, someone even recognized the term splatterpunk.
Yeah.
B, had any sort of recommendations, or C, was willing to even consider carrying it. Like, like, this is wild to me. And I was like,
that would not have happened, man, when I was first getting in.
Yeah. And that, but I mean, again, like, it's a testament to, like, it sells. Like, we, you know, my horror section started as a display because I just was like, oh, I've read a lot of horror, you know, over the last few months and I just want to, like, share it all. And then it just kept selling. So we were like, maybe this should be a thing. And it, I mean, like, it's, we're doing this thing right now where we're actually tracking the data of sales for specific sections and actually looking at, like, how big the sections are. So we're looking at, like, sales per square inch, which is really cool. So soon I will have actual data to see, like, how well my horror section is selling.
Wow. That's super interesting.
I'm so excited.
What if you guys discover something really weird? Like, the sports books are like 50%. And then next time I go there, like, half the store is like basketball books.
It's just a wall of basketball.
That sounds fun.
And like three poetry books and like four. We just completely rearrange everything based on, like, a year's worth of data. But no, it's just so cool. And it's like one of those things, we started doing these little like laminated cards for books that kept selling out that were just kind of like, they're either back ordered or we just, like, can't keep them on the shelves no matter how many we order in. And so it's like when you pull the last one off the display or the shelf or whatever, it's just like, this book is popular, bring this to the register and we'll order it for you. And we have so many of those because like, it's just selling so well. And obviously, like, particularly now because people are like, it's spooky season, I want to read something
I had a crazy thing where I went to John King Books, is like a super famous used bookstore here in Detroit. And for years, you go up to the third floor and it's kind of a creepy place because you have to, like, pull the string, whatever, to turn on the light in the aisle.
Okay.
I mean, you walk down, like, a fairly, like, sunlight comes in through the windows, but I mean, it's like you walk down dark floors, yeah, into your aisle and you turn the light on. And the horror section's all the way at the back.
Of course. I love that.
You go down there and it was a wall probably about as big as what's behind you right now of like horror paper bags. And I mean, I got so many things there through the years over time. I went in there the other day and I'm like, where's the horror section? I went up there, it's not there anymore. And they're like, oh, that's like, it's sold.
Wow. I'm like,
what? And they're like, oh yeah, no, it's like impossible to keep that in right now. I'm like, are you f-ing kidding me? Like, I'm in, like, my whole life it's been there.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, it's like, we can't. So they sent me to this one section and it literally was just VC Andrews and Dean Koontz stuff, kind of. Like everything else was gone.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. It's, I mean, again, like it is, it's so interesting because like horror writers have been writing like forever, you know, there's always been horror, like it's always been out there for whatever reason. And I honestly think the pandemic was a huge piece of this, but like people discovered horror over the last few years, like in a mainstream kind of way. And it's just been,
I one time saw an interesting, I almost don't even want to equate it to this, but I saw an interesting article that Brian Keene wrote about whenever a Republican is in charge of the, or is the president, horror booms. And I was like, And then he like mapped it out. He's like, the 80s is like the golden era, and that was all Reagan. And he's like mapping it all out. And Clinton was the 90s, and horror was like a lower, you know, Obama, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, and then like the most vile Republican of like imaginable takes office, and horror explodes. And I've never been one to like, I don't necessarily look at, and I, maybe you do, but I don't necessarily look at horror as like, oh, it's cathartic or it has to represent current fears. I don't necessarily see it that way. I see it more as like this sort of like arrested development that I cherish, like a fountain of youth, where I'm able to, like, you only expect like a kid to believe the, you know, the vampire in the movie could be outside his house or whatever, but I am still able to believe the horror story for the duration of the book or the movie, and with the great ones even after for a while. And so for me, that's the thing about it that is so thrilling, is this, it's like a fountain of youth in a way. And that doesn't mean immaturity, it means, because the wonder, imagination, the questions, the optimism of childhood. So for me, that's always been. But Brian Keene's thing is like, I was like looking at it, and I'm like, why that this is f-ing true?
It's it's interesting because I've always been, you know, spooky. Like I've always been into Halloween and horror movies and stuff like that. But I started really, really delving into horror around 2020. And I don't think it was, I mean, like, I think probably there was something to be said for reading something that was scarier than what was happening outside my window. But I almost think it's like, for me, it's like, I want to read something that makes me feel something. And like, horror does that. Like horror, like gets my blood pumping. And it like, you know, it's like, for me, like reading horror is what, for someone else, you know, reading like an adventure or a fantasy or whatever, like would be like, that's my thing, is like horror does it for me. So yeah, but yeah, there, it is that like, I am suspending all outside belief and I am fully in this story and I believe everything in this story for the duration.
And I don't even necessarily see that as escapism. And the reason I don't is I almost see it like, because escapism sort of belittles it or something. It's like, it's like, oh, I don't want to be bothered with what's real, so I'm going to read. That doesn't feel like the right word to me. It feels more like, what's the right phrase? Like, okay, if we do believe these things are possible for the duration of the book or the movie, well, that suggests that there is more to this existence than what we know. And what's more optimistic than more? So I think rather than a sort of escapism, I almost feel like it's like therapy. Yeah. I almost feel like it's like a reminder of like, possibilities, again, imagination, wonder, these things that, you know, the pumping blood thing. One time I had my heart checked out because I got a little nervous. My heart like skipped a beat. This is like 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I went to a heart doctor to get like a, whatever those are called.
Yeah.
EKG,
the like monitor thing. Yeah.
And I was reading a Dark Tower book at the time. And the doctor was like, oh, no, you can't read that while we. I think Steve is going to take that as the greatest compliment imaginable. Is that like a doctor was like, no, we're checking your heart. You can't read Stephen King right now.
Can't read that right now. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It just got dark in my office. That was weird.
Yeah. All the lights changed. Yeah, no, it's, I don't know. I just love it. I just, whatever it is, it's whatever it needs to be at the time for me. And it's like, sometimes sure. It's therapy. Sometimes it's an escape. Sometimes it's just, I just like this writing style. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It totally just like shifts on, but it's always what I gravitate to. Like, it's always like, it's very rarely any other type of book. It's like, if I'm like, oh, I should, what do I want to read? It's like my eyes instantly go to the horror section and I'm like, that one next.
I know. It's interesting. But you know what? It's also what you just said is really smart. Like, it does shift. Like, it's not one thing. It's not always even my description that of Arrested Development or cathartic, or sometimes it's just, holy f- this writing. You know, same thing with like music, where there's some music I'm not into, but you're like, man, this guy's good. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the guitar playing or the piano playing or whatever. And you're like, no, I mean, I'm not going to put this on and like dance or whatever. But like, this guy knows how to play the guitar. And sometimes just that alone, you know, you'll experience that. I felt that way with Truman Capote. I felt that way with Nabokov. Mm-hmm. I felt that way with Fitzgerald, where I don't even really know if I cared what they were writing about. Mm-hmm. The actual writing itself was so fluid.
Yeah.
You know who's like that is Cat Ward.
Yes.
It's like, it's so fucking fluid.
Yeah.
That it's like, you're like, oh man, like, I don't know. I almost don't even care what she's talking about.
Yeah. Like, oh, her books, man. I got to meet her recently. I went to an event and she is just, she's awesome. Like, her books are incredible and they just keep getting better, which I love. Because I mean, you read Needless Street and you're like, how do you top Needless Street? And then she comes out with like Sundial and yeah, you're just like, oh my god, Kat.
Go Down is like one of the greats, you know.
Oh my god, yeah.
And it's that kind of thing of like that same thing where like obviously she is telling good stories, but it almost doesn't matter. It's like, yeah, the record is so f-ing smooth.
Yeah.
And as like a, you know, I'm just not like that. And the same thing with our bands, like some, you know, some of our favorite bands, like we don't love the Beatles because they're like, their solos rip.
Right.
We love them right. Because their songs are awesome. And we don't love the Ramones because of their proficiency. We love it because of the energy.
Yeah.
But then there are some bands where you're like Jerry Garcia or maybe prog rock. And again, maybe you don't put it on at a party, but you're like, this is great. How are they doing this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the type of thing where it's like, even if you don't maybe like sit down thinking I'm going to listen to this right now, if it just came on, you'd be like, well, I'm not turning it off. I'm grooving now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this is great all the time. Even if I didn't like set out to listen to this or set out to, you know, consume this, whatever is like,
you can even equate that to like, have you ever read Richard Layman?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I don't imagine that he would be one of your favorites, but, but there's something about him where this is the weirdest thing. For a while, he was my beach read. Like,
okay.
So like over the top, like slasher. And like, there would be scenes of like, there was a scene where like, I don't know, I don't want to say sexist, if that's the right word, but there would be scenes where like a girl, her friend's being murdered, and then she's running away. And as she's running away, oh, she noticed like a stain on her like shirt, chest. She's like wiping her. I'm like, wait, your friend's dying.
Your friend's dying, stop.
What's going on right now? Richard, what are you doing? Like, but it was so over the top in that way that it was like, all right, this is like perfect for the beach.
Yeah.
And it almost felt like a Friday the 13th or something.
Yes.
And yep. So you could like equate that to that too. Sometimes I don't want the like super profound experience. Sometimes I just want like a fun horror experience.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Those are my popcorn books. It's reading this book goes down like eating popcorn. Like I just,
it's fun.
It's easy. It's fun. It's whatever. Gory.
Snarl. Yeah.
Yeah.
You go out and your eyebrows a little arched.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. No. And like, absolutely. And there's like, that's the thing about horror. And I, you know, this is probably true for any genre, but I just only read horror. So, but it's like, there's something for everything. It's like, whatever mood you're in, there's going to be a book that will be perfect for that moment.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also why I've been loving like anthologies and like short stories and things like that, because it's like so much in like one little package.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And it's why I love Spin and Black Yarn. It was like all these different vibes in this one little. Like,
I am so into that. And the very first, I think the first three horror movies I ever saw were like anthology horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Twilight Zone, the movie, Creepshow and Creepshow 2. And while Creepshow and Creepshow 2 are a bit more of a piece, Twilight Zone wasn't. It was like very different stories in one movie. And I think we've talked about this before. It was like an immediate education, immediate introduction to the genre that said, look, like it could be anything.
Yeah.
You have the creature feature. You could have the heartstrings, the Spielberg one. You could have a social commentary, the opening segment. You could have the anything goes with the kid in his imagination. And I draw a direct line from that to Pearl. Like the first horror movie I ever saw. The guy can do the kid can do anything with his mind, and everyone was sort of stuck in his web, right?
Yep.
And so right away, the idea of like, I don't want to say mismatched stories, but it's okay. They don't have to all follow the same vibe. And not only that, they kind of help each other.
Right.
You know, because if all five, well, see, but then Ronald's other book, Ghost Written, is about four like haunted books.
Mm-hmm.
Four different ways. That's kind of f-ing sweet too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like both styles, right? Because like, we'll talk about your book. So like Goblin, obsession, right? Yeah. Happening simultaneously. Like there's these amazing through lines, and I love that because it's like, it's a novel, but it's a bunch of novels. And then Spin and Black Yarn is like all these different vibes.
Yeah.
But they do fit together, but in a very different way than Goblin did. And like, and I love that too. Like, it's
just like, I know, me too. I don't really have, aside from what you said, or what am I going to read? And you immediately look to horror.
Yeah.
I don't have a go-to like style or whatever. It's like, okay, today I'm going to go for something huge and heavy and profound. And then tomorrow, like that Richard Layman, like popcorn book.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. Speaking of huge, I had to move Ghoul in the Cape down to my shelves down here because I kept trying to read it as my bedtime book and it kept hitting me. And I was like, I'm gonna die if this at night.
I just got this yesterday in the mail.
Is that the yep?
Yeah, look at this.
If I look at my shelves right now, Ghoul in the Cape is directly above my collected Poe. And they're the same size and the same color scheme.
Whoa. Oh, that's sweet.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. And then, like I showed you, I love how that we both have this right here.
Just right there. Just chilling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just chilling. Amazing. Amazing. So, you know, you've got like 37 billion books coming out. For usual. do we know what's is the nonfiction next or
no. So I gotta send Kristen some, I gotta fix,
oh, right, because you gotta shop that around still.
He hasn't read it yet. My manager has, but she, or he's reading it right now, but she hasn't read it yet. And then you gotta shop it around. But Incidents Around the House.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Oh god, yes. I'm so excited for that one.
Yeah, I feel really, God, I feel good about that one, man. Yeah, I feel really good about that one. So that one is narrated by an 8-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And it was funny because going into it, I'm like, well, we're going to have to neuter our speech. And I'm not really, not much.
Not and much.
It turns out I wasn't writing that far from how an 8-year-old talks. but yeah, that book. Ooh, man, there's a cold wind that blows through that book.
Oh, I can't wait.
And I was very aware of that and the rewrite, not wanting to close any of the windows, I guess.
Yeah, I'm so excited for that one. Cause my eldest, she's 6 right now. And so she's very precocious. So I'm like, I'm totally going to be reading Incidents Around the House as like Cordy narrating.
Oh,
and like,
sweet.
She's spooky. So I'm like, it'll work out.
Right. Oh man, I can't wait.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh my God. Yeah. I feel like we've been talking about that one for so long. I like forgot that it was.
I know. Well, that's kind of like that's one, like I'll see other authors wisely hold off on bringing up what they're working on until it's either announced, you know, the cover art or whatever. And in a way that's smart. I just can't stop myself. I just can't do it. I can't, like, I'm talking about this watching Evil Dead. It hasn't even been shopped yet. Who knows? It's like, I just can't do it. I can't do it.
But I don't know that I could either. I'd be too excited.
It's just too exciting. It's like, this is what's going on. Whenever pretend this didn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
and there's so much that it's like, how are you going to keep track of like, oh, I've talked about announced this, but not that. And I guess I can only talk about this. No.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
Well, I'm very excited. Do you know, like, is there any sort of timeline for Incidents or?
I think it's like August next year.
Sweet. Okay.
So, which always seems so far away, but it's not, it never is.
It's going to come up fast.
Like, it comes up fast. And it's like horrifying how fast that is. But yeah. Also, you know, I remember when I signed Bird Box, I'd been writing, I'm trying to do the math real fast. It's for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
I get a book deal. And no, I just want to make sure I have this right. Yep. So I'm 37 when I get a book deal. And which, wow, that's crazy. And then I just assume that means it's coming out in a month or something. I have no idea what went into this. None.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be on the shelf. And they were like, so it's scheduled for release. And it was like 2 years later. And I was like, I was like, what? I had this moment of feeling like it was a sentence.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I was sitting at this little tiny card table that we had against this wall in that apartment, and me and Allison, because I met Allison a few months before this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, 2 years, like 2 years. And now that's like, Bird Box seems like, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must just feel like you don't believe it's going to happen until it is on the shelf. Cause it's like, oh, it's so far away.
It was a sense of like 2 years, like, is this even real?
Yeah. Yeah.
But now it's not quite like that. Now it's more like I still have to do the copy edit for Incidents, but it's coming out in August. So it's not the same scenario. They were like, here's a debut author. We have to rewrite the hell out of this with him, blah, blah, blah. So
yeah, now it's a little more like, all right, we got this. we have a process and we know what to do. Well, I'm very excited, as you can tell. So I'll be looking out for that one and hopefully get some arcs at some point and start throwing it verbally at people. Like, hey, guess what? I just have so many customers who just, they come in and they're like, all right, Ryan, what do you got for me?
Yeah.
Here, this one and this one and this.
Well, that's like the best thing in the world. If you ever get a chance to, or if you ever read Watching Evil Dead, there's actually a section in there. I don't want to tell you this because it kind of ruins something, but it does talk about this guy that I would go to at Barnes & Noble, and like before I really knew anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like, so what else is there other than Lovecraft and Poe, you know?
Right, yeah.
Oh, you need to check out this and this. And I'm like, oh, what the f*** is that? You know, and like, I had no idea. So, I mean, it seems like an obvious thing to say that a bookseller can steer you in the right direction, but it could actually curate a lifetime of reading.
100%.
That's pretty profound.
It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. It's when I see it happening too, like when I see like someone come in and I like recommend the books, and then I start to see them more and more, and they're always in the horror section, and I'm like, I did that. Amazing. Well, I will let you go, so you can go, you know, write and put on spooky masks and prank Allison.
I'm gonna call I'm gonna call that guy about, I guess I don't have to, I'll say this vaguely, that guy about the potential two movies that I told you about maybe before we were recording. I don't even know, but yeah, I'm gonna call that guy after
yes.
this.
Yes, I am so excited about that. Vague, yay, vague. Congrats. amazing. A pleasure as always, Josh. Thanks for hanging out.
Yes, thank you. As you know, this is, I mean, I'm honored. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Enjoy the rest of your day.
And happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Bye.
Huge thanks again to Josh Malerman for hanging out with me on the podcast. Spin a Black Yarn and all of his books are available now at Gibson's Bookstore. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Blue Sky, and all of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!